This is The Topic is Trek, episode 12 for Friday, January 12th, 2018. Showtime at the Apollo.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
Yes, already our first ding of the new year. Amazing.
Well, Steve Jobs said, put your ding in the universe, so.
Let's go right past that one. Anyway, hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in to join me for this first episode of The Topic is Trek.
What's the star date this year?
Mr. Q, first episode of The Topic is Trek. Ding. There we go. It's all the time, folks. We'll get it back sooner or later. For 2018, our Mr. Chuck Tomasi on the bell.
How are you?
I'm just wonderful. How was your holiday break?
Relaxing yet productive. Thank you.
Excellent. 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 And Mr. Craig Stepp. Craig. Earth to Craig.
Maybe I should take myself off mute.
Oh, man.
Starting over again. You know, we got to work out some of the cobwebs.
Just like work.
I just laid out the best comedy gold. That was on
mute. And there it is, laying on the floor.
Yeah. All right.
Well, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. My beard's coming in, so I'm ready to visit the Mirror Universe.
Ah, well, I'm there with you. I'm there with you. Speaking of people there with us, by the way, a great segue there, huh? We have a special guest with us, Mr. Gary Lindros. Gary.
Hey, thanks for having me here today, guys.
Gary is a former contributor to the Babylon podcast and current co-host of the Critical Myth podcast on the VOG Network. So have you done the first show of your new year on Critical Myth?
Yes, we did. We actually did our first week's worth of shows. We do between 2 to 3 episodes a week on our show, and we talk about current TV, including Discovery and, you know, several other things that are on TV with a science fiction bend, but sometimes we go into other shows. So,
like Amazing Race and The Kardashians, things like that.
Dr. Phil.
Yeah. We're looking for that for maybe a supplementary podcast, but not currently.
Price is Right. You know, whatever.
Moonshiners. Yep.
Yeah. Moonshiners. Oh,
Moonshiners.
Stars.
Things like, out of the, WB. I mean, things like Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow. We cover Discovery on that show as well. We do get other things like, you know, Game of Thrones and shows of that nature. So Person of Interest, we covered a lot in the last season or so. Things along those lines.
Okay, so you're too productive for the show. Get out of here.
Overachiever.
Yeah. It's only been 2 weeks, Gary. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, it'll never last.
Yeah, that's true. We're on show 860.
860.
That's just since December.
No. But it's we've been doing it for a long time now. So
it's the number. It's 855 where they started, folks. So
Well, if you do 3 a week, it adds up.
Yeah, it does.
Well, we couldn't do many more of these shows because there's only so much of the topic. It's Trek.
Got it.
There we go. One can take. Anyway, let's get right to the news with Subspace Chat.
My thumb on that button feels like that comic O'Brien in the transporter room. It's just sitting there waiting for the words.
Oh, yeah.
And then when they come up, I'm completely caught off guard.
You're more like Sigourney Weaver. You have one job and you're going to do it.
Yes. Repeat what the computer says.
All right. So let's see what's happening in and around the Trek universe. And we'll start off with something from Craig.
Yeah. All right. I'm first, finally.
That's something. All
right, so, yeah, that's something. So the first article we have is an article about Seth MacFarlane, who starred in his own Star Trek fan film as a young man, which is kind of funny to watch, to be honest with you, after seeing the Orville. But long before he was voicing Peter Griffin, or a foul-mouthed Bostonian teddy bear, Seth MacFarlane was making and starring in Star Trek fan films with his friends. A 2.5-minute video posted to YouTube back in November shows the Family Guy / American Dad creator doing an admirable Captain Kirk impression, which, if we're being honest, is just a William Shatner impression. Yeah, Shatner, Kirk, same thing. Alongside him are two of his friends playing Spock and Uhura as a poorly rendered Enterprise takes them through some sort of wormhole and out of the time-space continuum. Even Scotty is included over the ship's radio, which sounds suspiciously like MacFarlane trying out an early Stewie voice. Anyway, the video, aside from giving us a rare glimpse of MacFarlane as a young man, young fanboy, serves as proof that the 44-year-old comedian is a big Star Trek lover, as he says he is. In the past, he said that he wanted to leave Family Guy in order to reboot the classic series. Well, that didn't exactly happen. His latest show on Fox, The Orville, is part of a parody of Gene Roddenberry's creation, and was recently renewed for a second season. And of course, there's a link to the video, or actually the video is embedded in the article right there. And it was kind of fun to watch, you know, see him act out pretty much what the kind of thing I would have done if I've done.
How long ago was this made?
Well, it says that they're not really sure. They said that purports that MacFarlane was either 14 or 15 years old. So we're talking about, what, 30 years ago?
Oh, I'd peg him a little older than that in this video. Wow.
It says he's 44 years old now. Okay. And this was either when he was 14 or 15 years old at the time.
Huh. Okay, so late 80s.
Yeah. What I get a kick out of is that he has a fairly elaborate set there. It's small, but it's elaborate. They have the doors all set up and everything for it. So I think kind of thing with, you know, somebody's garage had a lot of stuff going on in their basement.
Yeah, and look at the cardboard and tape.
Halfway through the scene, the door opens and Mom's driving in with her minivan.
Yeah. Mom, you're ruining the scene.
The light.
Oh, I thought that was the Orville pilot and Paramount just came out against them.
Yeah.
Cease and desist, and they had to, you know, change a few things around and wait a few years.
Now, I don't know if you guys agree, but I don't know if I would say this is the Orville is a parody of Star Trek.
It takes a lot of the cues, a lot of cues from The Next Generation. You know, where that, I don't think necessarily parody is the right word, but.
Yeah. It's style cues, I guess.
Yeah. Homage.
See, I would say more of homage instead of a parody. You know, parody, you think you're making fun of it.
I love Craig.
Stop it.
So I will mention now that when you go to the show notes over at thetopicistrek.com. Okay. Excellent work. Excellent. We're getting back on speed here.
Yeah.
That. Back off the rails again. We have links to everything we're talking about here during the show, so you can click through to this Sci-Fi Wire article and see the YouTube video there. But we're going to go right over to another piece of classicness with Chuck.
cutting out a little bit there, Clinton.
Oops.
We're gonna try and get Uhura on that.
Yeah, work on that. It sounds you're breaking up. Your substation, your substation message is breaking up.
We've got audio only.
That's
a little better. Just say like one word from now on.
All right. Let's. Oh.
This comes to us from comicbook.com. Even 50 years after its debut, The Trouble with Tribbles is one of the most beloved episodes of any Star Trek. But it turns out that the episode's iconic aliens came from another sci-fi great. David Gerald wrote The Trouble with Tribbles and created the titular alien creatures. He said titular. But the idea was seemingly borrowed from legendary science fiction author Robert Heinlein. The Tribbles resemble flat cats, which Heinlein... cats with no legs, no head. I get it. He created in his novel, The Rolling Stones. No Mick Jagger present. Like Tribbles, flat cats are troublesome creatures known for rapid reproduction. Heads of both Paramount and Desilu featured Heinlein would accuse them of plagiarism. They brought the issue to Heinlein's attention and asked for permission to continue. To their surprise, Heinlein granted it in exchange for a signed copy of the episode's script. What a price to pay. I wonder how much that script is worth these days.
On eBay.
Heinlein realized that Gerald hadn't meant to rip him off and gave the episode his blessing. Today, Heinlein is considered a pillar of science fiction, of course. His most notable works include Starship Troopers and Stranger in a Strange Land. Star Trek has also become a pillar of science fiction. The franchise is currently undergoing a lot of change. There's Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access, and Quentin Tarantino has a film in the works. Yet Star Trek star Nichelle Nichols feels the future of Star Trek is bright.
So I thought this was a story I had not heard before.
I've never heard that before either.
No, I've never come across it in any of the interviews, and I've read several by Gerald himself, and I've never heard him even hint at this, so it's quite revealing. Yeah, I never thought that I'd hear more Star Trek dirt after all this time on the original show. But
right. And does it source where we got this information from? I'm trying to look here.
Well, comicbook.com doesn't...
Well, that...
Yeah, I don't know where they got this from.
Maybe down here. No?
Jamie Lovett wrote the article on December 30th. What's this link, HT Inverse?
Well, trust us, it's the truth.
It's on the internet.
Yeah. You know that means truth. All right, well, we're now going to go from the past to not quite so much the past. I'm working these segues. I'm a little rusty on the segues portion of this.
Yeah. Early in the year.
Yeah, we're going to work away from original series to next generation with our next story that comes to us from Gary. Or he just left the room. I'm not sure.
He went to the bathroom.
That was our segue. Just walk through the door.
I'm still looking for the bathroom. But in the meantime, we have these little things to talk about. And what we're talking about is the recent new action figure set based on Star Trek Next Generation, and more importantly, Will Wheaton's reaction to them. While many Trekkies love the new LEGO action figure set based on the Next Generation, Will Wheaton is not one of them. The famed super nerd recently took umbrage at the new figure based on his most famous role, the teen prodigy, Ensign Wesley Crusher.
Can you blame him? Have you seen the picture?
Yeah, this is what we're going to talk about.
All right.
The action figure in question is part of a whole set depicting the main cast of Star Trek Next Generation, released by the company Minifigs.me. They're a web-based business that makes custom order Lego figures and adapts... unofficially, pop culture characters such as the Wesley Crusher figure. His particular figure is depicted as a crying child in contrast to the more stoic and determined adult features next to him of Picard, Riker, and Troy. This company, Minifigs.me, has done other popular franchises such as Rick and Morty, Red Dwarf, and even the X-Files in their unofficial remakes. Wheaton responded to the set's release via a lengthy post. He called the depiction of his character insulting and demeaning to everyone who loved the character when they were kids. He did, however, admit that Wesley was a terribly written character on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he goes further on to say that it's not about him, but this is about 30 years of people kicking Wesley Crusher around because the writers in the first season of Next Gen did not write him as well as the writers did in later seasons. And once the fandom narrative was fixed, no amount of episodes such as Final Mission or Starfleet Academy-like episodes would be able to change it. So he understands it, but he's not happy with his immortal representation being a crying child. And this was sourced from ScreenRant.com. And if you look up, as I said, either go to the site minifigs.me. minifigs.me to see a picture of the whole TNG cast, including crying Wesley with the very nice rainbow sweater.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like the kicker. That's like just the...
I love how the body shape on all Lego minifigs is the same. So, you know, Wesley's figure is just like his mom's, is just like Troy. It makes some of these people look a little portlier than they were in real life, yet some are perfectly suited, like Worf. That's what shape he was.
Well, they do have Counselor Troy in the scan. So
I know that was going to say the same thing. Yeah, she's in her cheerleading outfit.
Oh, it looks like it goes down to her knees.
It did in the show. Well,
no, it didn't.
Wasn't full body. It wasn't full body in the show.
That's true. Yeah, she did have the full body uniforms afterwards.
So at the same time, we have Riker with a beard. So where really are we in the timeline when we're talking about these minifigs? It makes you wonder.
Huh.
Well, let's see. Let's look at the baldash that Worf has. That's, yeah, it doesn't. It's not consistent. 1, 2, 3. We're all over the place. Must have been a time travel episode. Okay.
I'm trying to figure this is after Picard went bald. So I'm trying to remember when that happened. But
Riker did have a beard before season 2,
and it was
Worf's sash wasn't like that before.
Before Geordi got his eyes fixed.
I like Data's expression.
It's a living.
He looks like Wesley just goosed him.
Yeah. Oh, that's why he's crying.
I'm familiar with this human custom. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I did not mind Wesley. And I don't understand why everybody I didn't know this until later.
There was a lot of backlash. Heavens.
I agree with you. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please.
I went to my first Star Trek con about maybe 4 months after Next Gen had premiered. And, you know, I admit that I might have had some slight issues with Wesley. I wasn't annoyed or pathologically obsessed on, you know, by his portrayal. And I saw what they were doing. He was supposed to be that open wonder sort of, wow, this is all awesome. And I put it down as that. And then I went to the convention and the ballroom that we were in where they do the sort of, you know, the stars talking, booed him incessantly. Mm. And Jonathan Frakes really sort of toned them down and said, you know, don't you know, you're being cruel both to the actor, you know, and to the role itself. And he really sort of shamed everybody, and they were still grumbling, but they died down. But that was until I actually went to a convention. I had no idea about the intense feelings that character was pulling out of fandom.
Yeah, I can't tell. I mean, I know that part of it was that the poorly written aspect of the character. I think they tried too hard, too fast to make him a super genius. And I think that really didn't serve the character well, that you didn't ease into that aspect of him. And I don't know if, as you know, there are many people out there who get involved with Mary Sue, and I'm not sure if they thought this is not a Mary Sue the way a Mary Sue should be. A Mary Sue should be this thing over here instead. And so I agree with Will that as the character went on, that they kind of figured out how to write him, that he didn't have the answer to everything, and they kind of moderated down the character with, to I think, something much more in line with everything else on the show.
Hey, you know, I was just thinking, Wesley had some in common with Nog. You know, Nog's story arc where he ended up going to Starfleet and became a better character and was arguably, you know, kind of a hero at the end.
So Wesley still has all his limbs. So I just
Well, you know, there is that. But I don't know. I didn't have a problem with Wesley.
Those are considered a delicacy in France. Nog legs.
Ooh, I did not know. Legs.
Hey, wait a minute. You know what else? You've seen the show Malcolm in the Middle, right?
Yes.
Well, you know, Malcolm was supposed to be a very intelligent kid, and they played that up first two seasons, and they just kind of dropped that. No, he was as stupid as the rest of them. I mean, you know, so that's kind of what they did with Wesley. He was supposed to be some, you know, super smart kid, and they kind of dropped that.
Yeah.
Well, he did help out the Traveler.
He did.
He's more of a travel agent.
I see.
Travel agent. Got him a price line.
Price line. Yeah, exactly. All right. On that pun and joke, let's move on to something even more current, and that has to do with Black Mirror. Mm. And I'm going to try not to go too far into this article because it is a bit spoilery.
Has everybody seen this episode?
I have.
Yes.
Okay, good.
All right.
I thought we were required.
Homework.
Yeah.
Wow. Gary watched everything, including all the ads on all the books.
Wow.
Well, find out why these men are staring at this woman. Oh, wait. Those.
There's two reasons.
So this comes to us from SF Gate. Black Mirror episode insists USS Callister is not a satire of Star Trek. Oh, that's executive producer. Sorry, it says EP there. Season 4 of Black Mirror is going to boldly go where many have gone before with a fun wink at Star Trek in its epic sci-fi episode, USS Callister. However, the installment serves as more than just a tribute to the world's most famous exploration of the final frontier. Quote, we are not, excuse me, we are not diehard Star Trek fans, but we're absolutely in awe of the craft and the world of it and the execution, Black Mirror executive producer Annabelle Jones told The Wrap. Scrolling down here. But the show, Callister, is certainly not meant to be in any way a satire of Star Trek. You know what it's about on some level. It's hopefully a lovely classic sci-fi homage to Star Trek. But on other levels, it's about tyranny, and it's also about someone who has ultimate power, how technology can give us that power. And I'm not sure if I want to go any further into the article than that. If you haven't seen the episode.
The Callister is really just a backdrop. It's a recognizable framework for what they set up this episode about. I don't compare it to the Orville or Star Trek, or, you know, it's just it was.
Oh yeah.
It's a bit like you know, Ready Player One, and the context that they put that in with all of the, you know, the retro mentions and references.
Yeah, I feel like if you haven't watched the episode yet, and if you haven't watched Black Mirror up to this point, that's okay because they're all self-contained stories.
It's an anthology, and the premise about the whole series is it's a look in the near future at technology that's today to make it plausible, and then they say what could possibly go wrong, and they take it there.
Yeah, I mean he's a fan, and he built the world around that. And then went a little further.
Well, he had his own special version of the software that he played in, and not to his coworkers' delight.
Right. So I feel like if you saw the artwork or the promo pictures for the episode, watching it, you actually might be disappointed because although we do have that kind of Star Trek homage, it really... It's not the whole story.
It veers off very quick, very fast from that. What you think is a, as you said, a Star Trek clone, it becomes something else.
I mean, it's a very well done episode. It was unnerving, and it had an interesting resolution to it as well.
But
don't go in expecting it's going to be an hour long episode of Star Trek.
No. And I tell you, I like the opening scene when they were actually on the ship and some of the camera angles and the way they were looking. I was like, wow, it is very Star Trek-y.
Someone studied.
Yeah, big time. I mean, they nailed it. I was like, this is probably what I would imagine the original series would have looked like if they did continue it, you know, like brought it forward just a little bit. And not everything was as polished as like TNG, you know. It was like right in the middle there. I thought it worked pretty good.
I like the fact how that goes. Also shows it in, I believe, 4:3 aspect ratio for that
first
part. Oh, I hadn't noticed that. Shame on me.
I actually, it brought the book Red Shirts to mind a lot for me. As you get the sort of people who know what's going on, even though they're still acting within the framework that's set up, you know, for, as far as the show goes. So it had echoed a lot of that for me for at least a little while.
There were some interesting sidelines of what happens to your game characters when you're not playing the game that I just started laughing at this. Like that's actually kind of funny. I wondered.
Yeah. And you also find like some of the things they can't be doing, but that's another story.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a little awkward, wasn't it?
All right. So we're going to move on from again, check out the show and you don't have to see, and it's on Netflix. It's in the US on Netflix. I'm not sure worldwide where you'd find it, but you'll be able to find it someplace.
Is it not on Netflix everywhere? I might be.
I'm not sure because it might have different distributions someplace else.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to a little bit more somber story coming up next from Chuck.
This is from our good friend Larry Nemechek over at LarryNemechek.com. R.I.P. John Stewart. John Stewart is the original Alexander. Portland music fans and friends are reeling from the unexpected death on January 1st of rocker restaurateur. So much more.
Restaurateur?
Right. That's not a restaurateur.
No, it's a rest.
John Stewart, at age 33, known to Trekland as the young actor who at age 6 first played Worf's son, Alexander Rozenko, in TNG's reunion. After his appearance, TNG producers wanted a slightly older actor to handle the role a year later in a more ongoing basis, and Brian Bonsall appeared as Alexander in 7 more TNG episodes. Later still, actor Mark Warden played an older teen Alexander twice on DS9. A cause of death has not been reported, but 2 crowdfund support drives have been set up so that fans worldwide can help out. Friends have created a You Caring Fund to help with funeral costs. Stewart had a great following in the Portland area as a DJ and member of the punk band Problems. Problems. Earlier had formed the band Soda Pop Kids in Denver in 2003 and then relocated to Portland. A second drive on GoFundMe has been set up to help Stewart's retired parents recover and close down Stewart's popular local vegan restaurant, Harvest at the Bindery, which they had managed since it opened in 2015. So sad news, everyone.
Indeed. Indeed. And if you are interested in contributing to the fund, again, check the show notes for a link to those
things. Was he only on that one episode?
Yeah.
Apparently so. Yeah. I, looking at his face, you feel like you've seen him in more than one episode.
I know. It's
the other kid must have looked very much like him.
And sounded like him? Huh.
The clone.
Well, that first show, I don't think there was as much, as much dialogue as the later ones had as when he was dealing with Luxana and trying to work out his problems with his father. I think there was a lot more dialogue further on.
I remember him as being, he was thrust into this new environment with Worf and, you know, he was rebellious for a while, but I thought that was all from the get-go. I'm going to have to go back and watch that one.
Hey, did y'all find him annoying? Would you rather watch Alexander?
Save that for Wesley? Save that for the round table, Craig. Save that.
Yeah. Okay.
Anytime you say, would you rather, it's round table material.
Absolutely. Right. So we'll move on to some interesting information for people who may not have yet decided to get CBS All Access. Well,
what's wrong with you people?
Not so fast there, Clinton.
Okay. Right. Here's a story up next for... No. Okay. Right.
Where's my speed?
Double speed.
1.8 speed, please.
You can play certain characters on this show at double speed.
Yeah, right. So Star Trek Discovery is showing up on Amazon Video. Actually, it's Amazon. Amazon. It's a add-on to Amazon Prime.
I saw that.
Star Trek Discovery is the most successful streaming show. I wonder why CBS ever had. I'm sorry, that big S got in way off. Sadding?
Sadding and service.
Anyways,
like cough from another Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. Sadding. Anyway, adding significant numbers to the subscriptions to the CBS All Access digital service. Now those numbers are likely to get bigger because All Access is going to Amazon. CBS and Amazon announced this week that CBS All Access is about to head to the Amazon channels, a service offered by the internet giant that allows users to select various streaming venues from HBO to Showtime and beyond to add to their regular Amazon Prime service for an extra monthly fee.
Of course. Boom.
So for now, you can pay an extra $9.99 a month above your Prime membership, and you'll be able to add CBS All Access to your Amazon account.
Are you confirming Discovery is in the Prime universe? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh.
It's more like the add-on Prime universe.
Okay. Right. Yes. Okay.
Completely different.
Yeah. So the service not only offers... Yeah. So the service... Not, it's reacting to the Klingon we have here on as guest. The service offers not only thousands of episodes already produced on the network, but also new original streaming series, including Discovery, and access to the live CBS feed, which I did see on there tonight. I went and took a look myself. Mm-hmm. The deal marks the first time that the viewers will be able to stream network television live via Amazon.
They've had Thursday Night Football for a while.
Network television.
Isn't football on network?
It is, but it depends on who's the feed coming from. Is the feed feed?
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I caught that when I first read this article. I was like, oh wait, I guess. I mean, there's no NBC Live. There's nothing else. It's only CBS.
Sure.
So CBS has produced some of the most popular shows in television history. They have a fantastic selection of hit series. These are not my words. These are Greg Hart, Vice President of Amazon Video.
They have a fine selection of shows, said Craig Stepp.
That's right. So I was initially excited about this. I went, oh, finally, a little relief because I didn't want to necessarily pay for CBS.
Until you did the math.
And then I was like, oh, another $10.
Well, you're either going to pay it directly to CBS or you're going to pay it through Amazon, right? It's the same $10.
Well, the interesting thing is that they promise it will come later is the thing that I noted right away is that they don't have the version that I have, which is the $5.99
with commercials.
Right.
Now, they're claiming that that will come later on. I think the main advantage to someone on this, if I was paying the $9.99, I might switch over to this instead, because right now what I have to do is call it up on my laptop or my phone and cast it to my television, which doesn't have a CBS All Access app, but it does have an Amazon app. So I would be able to call it up directly from there, play it.
Yeah. I just use a Chromecast.
Right. Well, I'm casting rather than just, there's a native app within the television set. For Amazon.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So, Clinton, you've got the $5.99 model and go with commercials, as do I. Craig, what have you got?
I spent for the $10.
Okay, Gary. Okay.
$5.99.
Okay, I'm thinking of upgrading. I'm just wondering, is anybody else?
Well, I can upgrade.
I know. You're already there.
Show off.
I see no real need to. I mean, the only time it's a downside for me is when I'm writing my reviews, because if I'm going backwards and forwards watching an episode,
you hit the commercials.
At a certain point, a commercial will automatically kick in on me.
Well, I tell you, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gary. Please.
I was going to say, I know that not having commercials might be nice, but for me right now, CBS is still a one show reason to watch it. And I just don't want to throw out any more money for a single show. If they had, you know, some more properties that maybe I'm watching three shows on it, I'd be very tempted. But that's for true. One, I just can't justify it.
That's true. Well, and it does. Well, it does have the all valuable bathroom break, too.
Yes.
Well, I don't mind.
There's a pause button. I'm just pointing that out. There is a pause button.
Well, check this out. I was actually able to start watching Star Trek and be done with it before a record Technorama with Chuck. And Chuck didn't get to finish the episode because I imagine it was the commercials.
Well, also, I think that what people don't realize is that it says it premieres at 8:30.
Yeah.
And last Sunday, I started watching it at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it does show up early. They say 8:30, but I think it's mostly showing up like between 8 and 8:15.
I think if I started at 8, I wouldn't be able to finish in time because someone on this end has a bit of show prep to do.
Yeah.
all right, moving right along. No.
Speaking about show prep, I also noted that that After Trek has stopped going live. They are pre-recorded.
You know what?
I thought they always were.
No. I bet I know why.
Well, I think it's because of that annoyance of the live feed is done, and now you're going to have to wait 12 hours for us to process the video.
Well, I think the reason was, and I have no insight in this other than a guess, is there was a spoiler, Matt threw out a spoiler for the next episode on one of the earlier ones.
You think by pre-recording they can scrub it?
Yeah, because everybody's just talking. You know, you can say anything you want. So if they throw out a spoiler, they can cut the spoiler now.
Washed eyes.
Well, they also had some technical issues during some of the live ones where they were talking with writers.
Right.
And their audio kept cutting in and out.
That's another thing, yeah. When they were doing Skype or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, so related to this article, before we go.
Well, we never have Skype problems.
Yeah.
It's foolproof.
So, we're the fools that prove it. Okay.
So related to this article, I saw on Reddit, I was reading down a thread, and one guy mentioned that they were talking about throwing money at CBS for this and how some of the problems people have had is when they do have the commercials, it freezes and they have to start over and has to watch the commercials again. And I remember doing that on the Roku before. CBS sucked with the commercials because the commercial would kind of stutter or start over. It was, and they would cut the show in the weird places. But one of the guys said in the thread that he heard, no source cited, that after the season ends on CBS, it will be available in the U.S. on Netflix.
Well, I might put a tiny bit of credence in that only because they have the distribution pretty much every place else.
And it's already on Netflix. So
right. It's on Netflix except for what? Here in Canada, right? I think the only two places that it's not on Netflix.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You know, it's possible. I think that CBS is banking an awful lot on Star Trek pulling in an audience, though. And, you know, if you always knew, well, I can just wait.
Well, you know, and one of the guys did say that, hey, I may hold off if that's the case. And I was like, yeah, no, between us here, no, we're not going to wait.
Right.
But I would certainly welcome that because when the season's over, are you going to keep your CBS account?
I probably won't. I mean, we're talking about a really long hiatus here. So I probably will cancel that. And what I did was I took off my Hulu subscription to do the CBS All Access. And I'll probably revert that back until Discovery comes back again.
It will be interesting to see what happens to their revenue numbers.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they have to drop. Come on. I mean, really.
I don't need to keep it. I mean, especially if you can watch it on Netflix during the off season. That'd be great because I'll go back and rewatch it in the summer.
I have talked to a lot of friends who aren't quite as gung-ho as everyone on this show, but a lot of them was like, oh, I'll just wait till they're done with the whole season, and I'll just I'll just go through it all at one time.
Hey, yeah, CBS will go, wait, now the off season, they're going to rotate them, but they won't have them all available at the same time.
Oh,
you, like Disney
could do that.
Yeah, thank you for giving them ideas, Chris.
I'm like sure someone CBS
is listening.
Yeah,
to me.
Really.
Yeah. If you're listening, please buy ads on our show, CBS.
$1 a week is all it takes.
Yeah. For this show too? Oh, geez. Okay.
All right.
So there you go.
Let's move on from our advice to CBS to some advice being given by see the segues. I'm working on them.
They're just smooth. Yeah.
They are like sandpaper. Okay.
Rusty sandpaper.
Well, as the host of the show, Clinton, is gently suggested. yes, we are speaking about Jonathan. This one second, real quick, to just stay in your format. This comes from Inverse.com. Star Trek movie actor Jonathan Frakes gives Quentin Tarantino his advice when it comes to directing Star Trek. Jonathan Frakes knows a thing or two. Maybe one. The charming actor is
wow. Famous for playing. He is number one. I mean, exactly. Come on.
I didn't pull it off. he's famously known for playing William T. Riker on Star Trek: The Next Generation. But that's not his only contribution to mm-hmm. Next Generation. His influence behind the camera is arguably just as significant. He directed 14 episodes of the series. 14 episodes of Star Trek across three series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, as well as Voyager. Mm-hmm. Also two Trek films, First Contact and Insurrection. And now he returns to direct an insanely pivotal episode of Star Trek Discovery. Jonathan Frakes reveals the advice he'd give Quentin Tarantino about directing this rumored R-rated new Star Trek project. On December 8th, news broke that Quentin Tarantino was in talks with Paramount to direct a potentially new hardcore Star Trek project.
that sounds so nasty.
This is the article I've been told to read, sir.
Pardon me, did you order a tribble?
Since then,
when they say core, they mean like warp core. It's a hard warp core. Dilithium crystals and all. Anyway.
A lot of minds in this place. Anyway, since then, the in-development film has purportedly hired Revenant scribe Mark L. Smith to write the script. And Jonathan Frakes has one big reminder for the Tarantino project, should it actually materialize.
Don't screw it up.
Close. Don't forget the heart, Frakes told Inverse.com in a phone interview. Before you eat it, don't forget the heart.
I was going to say, was that from his Klingon menu?
Well done.
Well, he did back on the show. Anyway, though Frakes' Star Trek First Contact was considered a pretty brutal Trek movie when it was released in 1996, it still contains perhaps some of the most heartwarming scenes of hope and friendship in any Star Trek story ever. The Vulcans made contact with the human race. Picard learned to let go of his Captain Ahab-like rage. And Data admitted he only thought about betraying the Enterprise for like a tenth of a second.
Ah.
Yeah, I know, touching gets you right in the sub-process.
And anyway, Troy got sloshed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of fun.
So, he's saying, balance it out. Don't make it all, don't make it all blood, guts, and violence that there. It needs to be balanced to be a
good
movie.
We don't need Revenant in space.
I think that we all kind of get behind that idea that, when Trek becomes far too serious for far too long, it just starts to fall flat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And a good example of that is DS9. I've been kind of binging it, and it's like there's some serious episodes, and there's the Trials and Tribulations, and I'm like, okay, and there's a lot of little one-off jokes in there. They're in the turbo lift, and or Klingon and his heritage. We don't talk about that with outsiders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you get another serious episode. Yeah, I like how they break it up. So, you can't be too serious for too long.
Yeah, so, I think Jonathan Frakes was, had enough of appreciation for the series to know that you can't have something like the motion picture that was devoid of humor and sort of camaraderie. So you have to, you know, it needs, part of Star Trek's flavor is that that friendship among the cast. And if you don't show that, it's not really Trek.
Right. Hey, here's the humor from Star Trek, the motion picture. Spock, will you please sit down? That's it.
And scene.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, no, we also got, really, it's the humor is McCoy. That's about it. You're like, isn't it a good thing we happen to be going your way, you know? Yeah. And you're just as warm and restful as ever. Okay.
Weren't you going to take the culinaire?
Yeah. I believe you mean the culinar, doctor. Well, however it's pronounced, it's supposed to be the Vulcan ritual which purges all emotions. Okay.
That's the next movie.
And the film already had that happen to it.
All right. We'll move on to one last little thing here, and that is just the news that there'll be another Trek cruise in 2019, and it will be starring that whiny minifig.
Wow.
I heard they're going to check your luggage for Legos.
Yeah. Before
you get on. Will you sign this?
No.
Actually, I was just thinking the Wesley minifig, it would have been great if it had whiny on one side and you turn it around and he's smiling on the other. Behind the hair, you know.
Yes, his uniform on the other side.
I considered this. I very strongly considered this.
Well, we're talking about ourselves about going this. We've never been on a cruise before, and I know people that have been that were on the first Trek cruise, and the second two are happening this month. I know I think the first one is still out at sea.
What's now? Yeah, right now.
And I don't think they're going to do back to back again next year, though. I think that was too much. They had a lot of last minute. Hey, you want to buy a stateroom cabin for $12? Come on, we got room. So I think they're just going to go back to just the one cruise.
Actually, if you like the Star Trek page on Facebook, they've been posting some little wrap ups for each day, and it's kind of fun to see what everybody's doing.
Oh, fun. I like the picture on this website with this lady standing between a Gorn and a Magatu, and the Gorn is in like this Hawaiian vacation getup with the
chilling out.
Palm tree shirt and the orchid lei, and the Magatu's got a beer and a tie.
That's Lita, the Dabo girl.
Yes.
It is. Okay, Chase Masterson.
Chase.
I think that Gorn is actually smiling.
So's the Magatu.
The Magatu always smiled.
He kind of looks like Grandpa.
But the Klingon in the back is not having any fun at all.
No.
The Magatu kind of looks like Grandpa from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah.
Well, no, let's not go there. I'm just wondering. Just wondering if you get a Gorn out of the dance floor, are the moves like really slow?
The Gorn dance. You just made up a new dance.
The slow music comes on, all the Gorns come out.
Yeah.
They play the Titanic theme on a cruise and the Gorns go nuts.
I'm seriously considering going next year. I don't know about you two guys.
I think we're already lining up with some friends to do a different cruise in the spring of 19, but maybe I can steer them this way.
Yeah, because I definitely, you know, when Bonnie said, that sounds like fun, I go, okay, well, let's check this out.
Out of Miami, huh? Not too
just hard. Drive there.
Yeah.
Gary?
Yeah.
I could drive there, too. It'd just take a whole lot longer.
Yeah.
It's all connected, right?
It is. All right, and that...
Hey, by the way, I wonder if they really have the nacelles on the top of the ship like that. That'd be awesome.
Absolutely. That is an actual photo. That is not Photoshopped. That's the way it looks.
Yep. It's very seaworthy. Trust me. It won't tip over at all.
We got a warp core beach.
Yeah. Those are actually pontoons. Beach.
There we go. I like
is
that.
Is there any place that actually shows like an itinerary for the thing of what it actually does? You know, is it like how much like a convention is it or how much like something else actually, is it?
It's a little bit of something else. You have all these actors from different areas of Star Trek. And like Brent Spiner was singing one night doing a show. I can't remember the guy's name that played Trip on Enterprise. He was doing like a poker game tournament. So they, you know, they mix it up. Everybody's doing something.
Right. Oh, okay. Had, it's just like, I don't want to be creepy and just walk up to somebody when he's not, you know, quote, working. And you know, but,
Well, they might be walking around. I don't know how that works, but.
They're trapped there. You can find them. They can't get away from you.
Just go knock on every cabin door.
I will, Wheaton.
I know you're in there.
Bump each other again.
Yeah. Trip, I knew you weren't dead.
They have Elkar stuff all over, like the elevators. Does and
Frakes play the cook?
Oh, sorry. No.
Neelix plays the cook.
Oh.
We don't talk about Jonathan Frakes as the cook on this show.
I was not aware of the prohibition, sir. Owning two Enterprise uniforms, I share your disgust, yes.
So now it is time to close out of subspace chatter.
Wait. Oh, never mind. I thought we had one more article. I'm just as lame on this show as the other one. yes, I can make one up.
Okay.
Please, go on.
So now it's time to go out on our main mission. Do we have any kind of... There we go. We push the button. That's good enough.
The one button.
So we're going to take a Z minus 10,000 meter dive into one subject and try to stay on course. And as if we haven't done it already, could we hit spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert.
Once is sufficient. Thank you.
More than enough.
So our topic is Star Trek Discovery, Episode 10, Despite Yourself.
Is it Episode 10 or Episode X? I always get those two confused.
No. Yeah. That's the iPhone X you're thinking
10,
of.
X, I'm confused. The one that just aired, let's put it that way. Well, it didn't really air, did it? It was online.
Yeah.
I've turned it to Tilly all of a sudden. I don't understand what's going on.
You mean Killy.
Killy.
Yeah, Killy.
Can I become Captain Tilly's private security guard? Thank you.
I was hoping we would get to see the mirror counterparts in our universe, and I wanted to see Tilly with a beard.
It's not how it works.
He's a sharpie.
That's not how any of this works. So as long rumored, and Jonathan Frakes pretty much came out and spilled the beans a while ago and said, this is our foray into the mirror universe in Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly how they got here, although when they're discussing it in Lorca's ready room and Burnham says, maybe we should check over the logs. No, nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. We need That's to true. Just do other yeah. things.
Yeah.
Well, they made some reference to it. Like, oh, that was real convenient. We mapped everything out. Oh, we don't have time for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, because remember the last episode, Lorca tweaked the coordinates before they actually jumped.
Right. And that's why I think that I know there's a fan theory out there that Lorca is from the Mirror Universe.
Oh, hadn't heard that one.
Yes. Yeah. I've heard that one. Yeah.
And, you know, watching this last episode a second time with that as the lens, and then for the article I'm writing, going back over some other episodes, looking at it through that lens, I'm going, you could convince me.
Mm-hmm. Just like they convinced you that Tyler is Vok.
I also have another theory.
Yes.
That I will share, and it's just a theory, and it is mine. It belongs to me. Ahem. And that is that Giorgio is the emperor or empress.
Oh.
Haven't seen her.
Well, that's kind of typecasting an emperor, isn't it?
I think it'd be more fun if Saru was the emperor.
Danger is my business now.
I'll tell you when we're in danger.
My threat gangula has all sorts of decorations on it. It's out all the time.
In the mirror universe,
he's just
it's like
ganglia whenever.
I was going to say this.
He looks like Zoidberg.
Feel happiness coming on.
So what did people think of this episode?
I liked it. I was surprised. unfortunate as the Doctor's story was, I like where they're going with Stamets. Not sure what's going on with him yet. I'll be curious to see where they take that. But you know, just to come around every once in a while, don't go in the castle. It sounds more like a threat at Chuck E. Cheese, but
yeah,
he ate the magic.
No,
he ate
the magic, don't go in the ball pit is the threat in Chuck E. Cheese.
And don't eat the pizza. Oof.
He ate the psychedelic spores.
He did.
I thought that the minute he started hooking up with those spores. It's all clear to me now, man.
Actually, I thought Tyler ate the spores. Jeez, what was that whole psychedelic thing with Laurel?
Well, clearly, now, if we're understanding what Culbers was saying, is now you guys can walk through this with me. It sounds like what might be the case here, if we're to believe the Vok story, that
it's giving Vok, credence to that is what it is.
That Vok was altered to look human, and that Tyler's personality is overlaid on top of Vok's personality.
Right. If you put the clues together with a theory, it fits.
I thought it was the other way around. They had Tyler, and they put Vok on top of him.
No,
because they modified his body.
I'm saying that they
opened up all of these bones. They reduced the size of things down, smaller.
Right.
And he said that the testing they had done was about a personality buried underneath. But he now thinks that there's a personality overlaid on top. And I think the implication is that Tyler's personality is the one that's overlaid on top of Vok, who has been altered to look like a human.
You take things like the scene with Vok and Laurel, and he said, you know, what do I need to do? And she said, you need to give up everything. You know, there's the clues like that are compelling. They really are. Maybe we're all going to be gobsmacked and they're going to take this in a different direction, which would be really cool. I love it when movies and TV shows do that and go, didn't see that coming.
Well, he's obviously a sleeper cell of some sort.
Yeah, I mean, that's clear. Well, it's interesting that the producers have had fun with having like a fake account and fake pictures of the actor who plays Vok just in makeup.
Yeah.
In various places.
My question about the mirror universe, though, is how there. If that's what happened, if Vok turned into Tyler, then where's Vok in the mirror universe? And why isn't anybody going, hey, well, I know they haven't interacted with a whole lot of people yet, but someone's going to go, well, who's this guy? And how do you explain this random character that wasn't there before in your universe? My brother Fred from France. Yeah.
In which universe now?
In the mirror universe, there's no Tyler.
Okay.
There never was.
Well, I thought he did exist.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there wasn't a Tyler, because you could have a prisoner of war. You could have Ash Tyler as a prisoner of war and then alter Vok to look like him so that when Tyler's memory is overlaid on top of that, he sees who he is because he looks like himself and he believes he is who he is.
Okay, so it was more of a transfer. I thought it was a transformation into a whole new person.
Well, you would be transferring Vok to look like Ash Tyler.
Right. Right.
And then you could either kill or still have as a prisoner.
Gotcha.
I don't, you know, they would use the Mind Ripper or something to get his personality and overlay it on top of Vok.
I couldn't imagine Lorca wouldn't have checked his story at some point. I just don't.
Well, you said he did.
He did. Yeah. He did. But that, you know, that could have been fabricated too. Come on. Don't you play conspiracy theories sometimes?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. Okay, so I was surprised, not surprised, but I was happy to finally get that little bit of a payoff. Okay, there's something there. Valk is Tyler, and Tyler is Valk somehow. And I really like the detail they took to make everything, you know, and the way they twisted things for the mirror universe, like Tilly. She was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She was, what the heck? Hell. Yeah. hold your horses.
Was that too much?
Yeah. No. In this universe, that's just perfectly fine.
Yeah. And Lorca doing the Scottish accent. There were some funny little payoffs, little jokes here and there, but the level of detail, they even, you know, the one thing I was like, does every starship have a little device that goes out and can change the registration on the hull of the ship?
Somebody had to go out there with a bucket of paint. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Well, they were showing two little, either they were worker bees or robotic devices that essentially were just like stripping off the first part of the U.
Yeah, they must do a lot of more maintenance on these things than I imagine. Yeah. Oh, send out the machine. Send out Joe.
I thought it was e-paper or whatever. You could just flip
Scruffy. It Scruffy from Futurama. Gotta do the registration again.
Somebody out there with rub-ons. Oh, man, this is huge. The
press type letters.
But it's the old model kits. I got to soak this in water. Then I got to go out there and put that down.
I did like... a little slight twist, not twist, but set up where Michael had to fight that guy, Connor, which was somebody that she knew of.
Yes.
Right. I'm keeping track of who the characters are on a spreadsheet. And mm-hmm. Now I have Connor down being killed twice.
Excellent.
It's working.
Yeah. That would not be your dream acting job, would it?
Hey, we're bringing you back. Oh, really? Oh, that's great. Oh, no, we're killing you off this episode. What the?
You get your own ship for about 20 minutes. And, congratulations.
I liked the Agonizer booths, too.
Yeah. Those are the ones they developed on Enterprise.
I kept looking to see, did they have the little personal Agonizer?
No, I didn't see that. Belt. No, they just threw them into the booth.
Yeah, and those are the same booths they had on, they developed on Enterprise, right? Except yeah, well, they weren't glowy.
The one that they had in the original series was close to that, but mm-hmm. there was only one of them, you know. Now we've got three.
We progressed.
Yeah. Mass production.
When they went back or went over, I guess, I think they were those things already existed.
On the show Enterprise they talked about developing it. I just went back and watched the episode
Agonizer booths.
Phlox and Reed were talking about, look, this is what we developed, you know. Yeah, they were talking about the booths.
And then we have the big reveal that, hey, we're trying to tie in with all sorts of other things because look what ship is there. It's the Defiant.
It mm-hmm. didn't look like the Defiant.
DS9 right. Defiant.
Well,
it didn't look like any Defiant.
Well, I think it looks closer to a starship than we've seen so far on Star Trek Discovery.
Was it me or did it have like four nacelles, like two little tiny ones?
It didn't have four nacelles. It had a bend on the where there was another
struts,
there was another piece in there, and whether that was more engine, whether those were weapons, it was hard to tell. And then they'd increase the number of antennas on the deflector dish. It looks very similar to Discovery now in that respect. And then there are notches in the hull, but as someone
hate the discs, don't they?
They do. They hate those discs. Somebody pointed out, though, that the Defiant would have been in this space now for, close to 100 years?
Yeah, over 100 years. You figure it was about, if it went into service the same time Enterprise did, it would have been, just to totally geek out, would have been in service about 20 years before it shifted, and now we're 100 years past that. So, it's probably a 120-year-old ship.
So, you would assume that it's possible that you could have a hybrid ship.
It's been refitted a couple of times.
Yeah, not to mention stripped down for the tech too. I mean,
yeah, it's probably been piffled and changed and whatever over the years.
Like B-52s, they're still flying from the 50s.
Yeah,
Rock Lobster.
We're on the K model. Yeah.
Rock Lobster.
So do we have any
52? Okay, never mind.
Do we have any other predictions about where we're headed from here in the Mirror Universe? I kind of threw out a couple things of my thoughts.
I have a feeling that lines are going to get blurred and some people are going to have trouble trying to keep it straight.
Anyone in particular?
Not Michael. I think she's too intelligent for that, but, I'm not quite sure why I was thinking about that, but I'm like, you know, they're really getting into it. And now Michael's on a ship. She's actually the captain just by showing up, you know, so.
Well, showing up and killing the other guy.
Which was her career before the whole, you know, binary stars fight. She was in line to be, you know, to be a captain. So she's sort of getting everything she wanted.
Exactly.
So they wanted to be a captain.
On the ship that she was. Yeah. On the ship she was. Yeah. So. I just have a feeling they're going to go so deep that they may have trouble kind of trying to get their minds out of it, especially once they move on past this. Yeah, I don't know. There'll be some trauma in there.
Well, and what I'm interested. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and this is, I mean, we already know it's going to at least episode two with this, but I feel like this, they're going to run this thing for what, 5-6 episodes. It feels like, I mean, they're really stretching. You could tell by, I guess, all the prop changes that, oh, wow, they're actually laying money. They're going to use this for a while. So.
You think so? You think they're going to go that long?
I thought it was I thought in After Trek they kind of quickly, like offhand remark, indicated that that is the second half of the run.
Yeah, that's the feeling I get is they'll run the Mirror Universe
at least
through
the end
season.
Of the season.
Yes.
Okay.
Which to me, the main problem with that is what are they going to come back to? Because as I noted, when we had that last episode, they left without telling anyone else how to defeat the cloaked Klingon ships.
Right.
And we're running in real time here. So if it's a minute here, it's a minute there.
Yep.
Yeah. And they got days. Well, I guess days in their timeline. So.
And they were talking about the fact that there were Klingon ships, in, you know, closing in on Federation territory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, not sure what they're going to come back to when they finally get back there.
Yeah. Speaking of the episode, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. And speaking of coming back, I liked Hugh enough where I about jumped off my couch when Tyler snapped his neck. I was like, no.
Yes.
No, Clinton. Oh, it was,
yes.
I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Jumping back to the other topic, though, we don't know what impact the mirror discovery is having in our universe either. They could have brought tech. They could have brought, they've obviously brought their whole set of morals and alien bias and all this kind of stuff.
Or lack thereof.
Right. It will be interesting to see how that germinates.
You know, I wonder, it'd be cool if they have one episode where we actually visit that mirror discovery.
That's what I'm hoping, is we get a glimpse of the goatees in our universe.
Yeah, and they could. They actually, you know, because the sets look like the mirror, the Terran discovery. So why not jump over to, the real prime universe, a regular universe, and see how they're dealing with things.
Well, then you have to have that guy strip the little logo off the floor, and then you got to put it back down again.
Change all the screensavers.
You know? So much work.
They actually just play the footage backwards that they made when they were updating the ship.
Scrubby's got to go out and paint that.
Don't give away production secrets like that.
The little worker bees are going backwards. No.
Well, hey, one thing they did reveal on After Trek is that we haven't seen the last of Hugh.
Yes. I caught that as well. I'm not opposed to having him somehow come back to life. I just, how is that going to happen?
We may see him in the mirror ship in our universe.
What if we get the mirror you.
Right.
Or something. I don't know.
I also noticed that he did not have a Terran Empire badge on. He just still had a medical badge on.
Does the Mirror Discovery have a spore drive?
That I'm not sure about.
Because they've always implied that they're behind, so I don't know.
Hmm.
But all bets are off with spore drive. So
hey, yeah, right.
Well, yeah. I wonder if the Discovery is slower and not necessarily faster, like the but it just appears. You know, what if it can't? And they are slower getting to things in the Mirror Universe.
It's just kind of like, oh, I can buy a warp 2, warp 3. You know, we're good. We're good. Look, we spin. Yeah, that's right. It should spin.
Well, you know, it could be a whole cruel, sadistic thing where they have, dozens of those tardigrades and they're just burning through them, too. You never know.
Yes.
Ooh.
Good point. No moral ambiguity there. All right. Well, we're looking forward to the next couple of episodes of Star Trek Discovery to hopefully answer some of these questions, although I've got a feeling they're going to raise even more before we get to the end.
I agree.
And so let us return from our main mission. I'm not sure which I like better. I couldn't tell that.
The command functions are offline.
Oh, man.
And time
for when that happens.
Our quick warp speed roundtable. Now that we're safely back on board, it's time to take one rapid fire topic in our warp speed roundtable. And so, gentlemen, January 3rd marked the 25th anniversary of the premiere of Deep Space Nine.
Wow. Thanks for making us feel old again.
Oh. You're welcome. So, my question to each of you is, who is your favorite DS9 character and why? And I will start with our guest.
Oh, geez. That's a hard question. I have a few, but if I got to narrow it down to one, I will say, I'll say Nog. As a character, I like to see characters grow throughout a series, and no pun intended with his height, but he had so much character growth. He went from that little kid hanging with his feet over on the edge of the promenade to commanding the Defiant at times, and sacrificing and going through the horrors of war. It really was quite a character span for him, and I really liked him a lot. Part-time people, I'd say I like Sloan, but that might be stretching the topic too much.
I thought you were going to say Morn.
No.
I liked him for his dialogue. That was really wonderful. All right. I am going to ask next, Craig, who is your favorite DS9 character and why?
I am probably going to say, collectively. All right, more of a species than a character. I'm going with the Ferengi because I had such a good time learning about the Ferengi and watching them, especially like Quark. I think I like Quark, I guess.
I'd go for the Negus. If it came to a specific Ferengi,
you'll have your turn, Negus,
hands down.
You'll have your turn.
Well, no, I like Quark because he would, he was doing underhanded stuff, but at times he had to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And he would always kind of get screwed and, okay, well, we always got tomorrow and try something else.
He was kind of the Better Call Saul kind of character, if you've watched that show.
Yeah. So he's morally ambiguous, and kind of, but he ends up helping out when needed. You know, I also liked Rom because he kind of surprised everybody by being smarter than everybody thought he was, I would say that I'd have to say the Ferengi as a whole, as a collective. Like I just finished watching recently the Little Green Men. That was fun watching them, and they were the main part of the show. Actually,
they were indeed.
I think for a while there, the Ferengi were the main part of the show for several episodes. But I liked Little Green Men. So. And Nog, see, I like Nog. I like his story arc, just like Gary was talking about. So, yeah, I would have to go with Ferengi.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, Chuck, to narrow it down to one.
Yeah, thanks, Craig.
Quark. I'll say Quark. How about that? I'll go with him.
Quark.
Yeah.
I'm going with Garrick. I like the way that the writers kept you guessing of who he was working for, what were his alliances, his relationship with Bashir. That whole, you can't quite put your thumb on whether you like him or not. It's like, what is this character? And I liked that about him. I thought the actor did a fine job of, you know, come into my shop at 8 o'clock for a fitting.
Wink, wink, not nod.
Right. And you're like, okay.
You know, I'm like, why do I need a suit? Come to my shop and get fitted for a suit.
So I liked Garrick and the way he was portrayed.
Okay. And actually, I've written down here, I'm also going with Garrick. I enjoyed the character. Every time he was in a scene, I was just riveted going, who is this person? What side are they on?
Yeah, is he an insider? Yeah. Is he just a free agent? What, you know, you're not sure which way that coin was going to fall.
And he was, you know, oftentimes is very off the cuff and very relaxed, you know, talking with Bashir, having a rectigino, and then would turn around in something like In the Pale Moonlight and just be brutal.
Yeah, cold.
And his character had such a sad ending to him. You know, he gets everything that he wants. He gets back his homeworld, but it's destroyed. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing there anymore. So I found that character enjoyable throughout and always kept me guessing. So, looks like Garrick wins. This wasn't a contest because the real winner was Self-Stealing Stem Bolts was the favorite character.
Self-Stealing Stem Bolts. Yes. Damn.
So, I'm sorry none of you had that in the lottery.
How many slip strips and bars of gold-pressed latinum is that going to cost you?
You couldn't afford it.
Well, I started to say Morn, but, you know, he had an interesting character arc and all the stories he told.
You said more than Morn said. Yeah. So, you know.
I'm still surprised they gave him an episode.
Yeah.
That looked like a hot costume. It just looked like an uncomfortably warm,
didn't it?
Or warm costume to wear.
Did they even have to put anybody in it all the time? They could have just parked it.
A mannequin at the bar.
And if it was like that fitting sweaty, it probably stood up by itself anyway. So.
It's probably like a fitting dummy sitting there. Yeah.
So right, someone just jiggles the stool every once in a while to make him look like he's moving. As they're shooting, he falls off.
I do have to say this, though. Yeah. I do have to say this as far as watching DS9.
Yes.
You know, I watched a good bit of it, but for some reason I didn't watch it religiously like I watch other stuff because whether it was timing or, you know, whatever was going on in my life, I don't remember, but I didn't really watch a lot of it. So while rewatching it, I'm like, wow, I kind of missed this episode, but a lot of the highlights I know, but it's fun. It's so much fun watching that show. It is great. It is a great, just TV show in general.
And it's nice to think about it the same way, you know, we talk about Discovery is that, you know, it took a while for to get its footing, you know, decide what it wanted to be. And there was a lot of depth to it, but you had to wait a while to get there. And I think that, you know, as we start off with Discovery, I think Discovery is holding up its own very well, but clearly we're still defining who this character is and who that character is and where are they leading to. And I think that, you know, the off season for the writers is going to probably be the same type of deal you had with the writers on Deep Space Nine going, okay, well, great, we got this going on, but we need to really hunker down and get behind these characters and who are they?
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of getting over the beginning of it, Julian Bashir was so annoying at the beginning.
Yes.
He wanted to dry hump everything.
That was his charm. That was his charm.
He was so Wesley confident. Of Deep Space Nine.
He was trying so hard to get laid. It was ridiculous. I'm like, ugh.
Come here,
and he was so overconfident about everything, about he was going to, you know, come and tame the wild. My favorite bit of that is when he comes in and he goes, I'm going to be taming the Wild West of the frontier, you know, and Kira's just like, this is my home, dude, you know.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yes.
All right. So we're about to go boldly, that away. But before we do, how do people get in touch, or what's happening with everybody? Chuck, how do people get in touch with you, or what do you want to plug this week?
This week? Well, there's a book. You know, find everything about me at chucktomasi.com, and that will lead you to the podcasts at chuckchat.com. It'll lead you to the books at podcastingfordummies.com. That's sort of the central repository of all things me.
Okay, very good. Craig, what's up with you? And do you want people to get in touch with you, or say, leave me alone, I'm a hermit, yeah. I'm Morn?
Yeah, I'm Morn. I'll speak to you like that. No, you can find me at Technorama with Chuck on Sunday nights. We broadcast over on Facebook and over to our show at chuckcheck.com on /Technorama. And if you're interested in the Dog Days of Podcasting, go there.
Never too early.
Yes, never too early. You start planning now. And the Dog Days of Podcasting is a 30-day podcasting challenge we usually take leading up to Labor Day weekend. So,
and you had a variant of that this year as well, right?
Yes, we did. We had the Dog Days of Advent, which that also went pretty well. And I was about 2 weeks behind in finishing because there was just like so many podcasts. But it was a lot of fun to listen to.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. A lot of people participate in that. So if you are not podcasting yourself, and just want to listen, go to Dog Days of Podcasting and you'll get more information on that.
Hey, Gary. I would say listening supporting people as a listener or podcasting, you're still contributing to the challenge.
You're a winner.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. Gary, what's up with you? How do people get in touch with you? What do you want to plug?
I'll plug my podcast. It's you can find it at vognetwork.com /critical-myth. That's about it. I'm not that involved in podcasting as much as I used to be, but I'm still going strong.
Okay, fair enough. And people get in touch with me at comedyforecast.com. And you can find my show there. And of course, every roughly 2 weeks, we took some time off there for the holidays, but every 2 weeks here at The Topic is Trek. But right now it is time to engage the spore drive.
Damn it. It's oil.
Speed buggy.
Please be sure to tell a friend about us and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode or a special effect. We'd love to hear from you, so follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, Gary, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening, and as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt!
Damn it, are you okay?
Don't go into the castle.